show is a part of the Quite the Thing Media Podcast Network.
Hey, everybody.
This is Kim.
And this is Cal. And you're listening to Shiny Things.
What's up, Cal?
Oh, nothing. Getting a little nervous. I have to cook a turkey tomorrow. And I've never cooked one before.
For your house of two, huh?
My house of two, yes. We have been on quarantine / as got COVID. And it's been a long 2 weeks.
I'm sure it has been. Didn't you say you had her scheduled for her COVID shot and she got it like a few days prior?
Yep.
Bad timing, but well, now the good thing is she's not like sick in the hospital or anything.
Right. And she's got good immunity right now. So.
Okay. Well, that's good. If you need help with your turkey, just call me. I'll walk you through it or call your mommy. They know, mommies know everything.
That's true. But I helped you with your mimosas, so you can help me with my turkey.
That's true.
And only everybody, just so you know, my directions were...
I was just going to say that.
A little bit of triple sec, a little bit of orange juice, and then fill that bitch up with champagne, yeah, or something like that.
I was going to say, I think you forgot how you really said it, or was selective memory, because I thought that was hilarious. And that's exactly what we did. And we used your recipe again this past Sunday.
And it was good, right?
It's delicious. Oh my gosh. Everything's better with champagne in it.
Exactly. And you don't want a lot of orange juice. You don't want to get heartburned.
That's true. Anywho, so our last podcast was about Nicole and Ariana Fitz. For those of you who didn't get a chance to listen to that episode, Nicole was found murdered. They still haven't found her killer. And Ariana, her three-year-old, is gone missing and they haven't been able to locate her. So if you haven't heard it already, it's a good episode.
It is. It really kind of also kind of, if you're somebody that's overly trusting, it's really good to listen to and kind of put things in perspective and see.
Yeah, because, you know, it's hard to say don't trust people because you want to trust people, you know, but you have to be cautious about it.
So what are we going to be talking about today?
So, Kelly, I know I told you I was doing a podcast research on these two sisters.
Oh, the Papians, right?
Yes, I actually put it on Twitter and Facebook. These two women are very disturbed, to say the least.
Are they twins?
They're not twins, but they sure look like it.
Okay, because I'm saying the picture I saw on Facebook, I was like, they kind of look like twins. And there's... what do they call it? Like evil twins and things like that. So I wasn't
sure. Yes, they definitely look like twins, but I think they're like 5 years apart.
Oh, okay. Well, the one looks good for her age then.
So anyway, these sisters are from France.
Ooh.
And the story takes place in the early 1900s. And it follows the Papin sisters from birth into their tumultuous childhood and into the wake of all their destruction.
Ooh.
Into their adult lives. So basically, to put it in Kelly terms, these are crazy bitches.
They sound like crazy bitches.
they really are. I couldn't believe this. I mean, I honestly, I thought maybe they should have been in the creep off, but. One, you know what, one is just as bad as the other. So now, and also forgive me if I don't pronounce these words exactly appropriate, but they are French, so I'm having a little bit of difficulty. So anyway, it all began with the parents. His name was Clements, or I'm sorry, her name was Clements Durr, and his name was Gaston Papillon.
Like Beauty and the Beast.
Yes. So how do you say that properly?
Gaston, yep.
Gaston.
Gaston.
So they started a short courtship in 1901 and married that October. And then 5 months later, Emmeline, I'm sorry, was born. If you do the math,
she okay. was
obviously not a virgin when she got married. Now, Gaston, however you say it, had a suspicion that his new bride was having an affair with her employer. And it was also rumored around the town. So he decided to look for a new job in an entirely different city. And then with any luck, they'd be able to move away and end the affair. So apparently, she was a bit of a tramp.
Mm.
So it did finally happen. He found a new job and was offered it outside of town. But his happiness for this was short-lived because when he told his wife they'd be leaving Le Mans, she wasn't having any of it and declared she'd rather kill herself than leave the city. So regretfully, things between them got worse. So he didn't end up taking the job. They ended up staying there. So who knows if she was still carrying on or not, but they continued on with their marriage. And then it began to fall apart. You know, after the whole thing, I'm going to kill myself if I have to move.
Oh, yeah.
So he began to drink heavily and was rumored to be an abusive alcoholic. While Clements continued, Gaston began drinking heavily and was rumored to be an abusive alcoholic while Clements continued her bad behavior around town, which is probably why she was considered to be of low morals and an unfit mother. So basically, she was a trashy slut. So when Christine was born 4 years later, so now she's got two kids in mm-hmm. a shitty marriage. She was born 4 years later on March 8th, 1905. It wasn't a surprise to anyone when she gave the baby up to Gaston's sister and her husband, where the little girl lived happily for 7 years until her mother put an end to that. But I'll get to that. She was mother of the year, apparently.
Sound like it.
Then Leah was born 5.5 months later on September 15th, 1911. So now she's got three girls in a shitty marriage. And who knows who the father is, but. And then she gave that baby immediately to an uncle to raise shortly after birth until he passed away. So during that same time, Clements filed for a divorce after finding out her husband had raped the oldest girl, Amelia, who was 10 at the time. So she didn't necessarily believe Amelia was raped. She thought her own daughter seduced Gaston. So she's a piece of shit.
Yeah.
So her being the vengeful bitch that she was and seeing how she wanted her daughter punished, she sent her to a Catholic orphanage, which was known for its brutality and harsh discipline. And then for further revenge, she tore Christina away from her loving home with her aunt and uncle and placed her in the orphanage as well. And since the uncle had passed, her final move, releasing her from all her responsibility of motherhood, Leah, the youngest, was also sent to the orphanage. So she was done. The plan was for the girls to stay put there until they turned 15 and could go work as live-in maids. So not only did she put them in an orphanage, she was going to pull them back out again and then put them to work. So the sisters grew remarkably close, and when Amelia was old enough, she took the vow to become a nun. And Christine had attend, intended to follow her sister's footsteps when she was old enough. But when Clemence, the mother of the year, heard of Amelia's decision to join the order, she took Christine out of the orphanage immediately and found her work in a middle-class household where she was trained in a variety of different domestic duties, and she fit in perfectly. So the one girl, actually, the oldest girl, got away with it. She didn't end up having to do something she didn't want to do, and she actually got to be a nun like she wanted. But this girl wasn't so lucky.
To each their own, I guess.
Yep. Her employer was incredibly happy with her, and even though she could be insubordinate at times, her mother wasn't satisfied with her wages, so she forced Christine to resign and seek better paying positions. So if you caught that when I said she was a little bit insubordinate, her employers were happy with her work, but she had a bit of an attitude, I guess.
Okay.
So, well, I would be too if I had had her life, I guess. So Leah, the youngest one, was also forced to work as a maid when she turned 15 and was described as quite the opposite. She was quiet and obedient and was a bit less intelligent than her older sister, they say. The sisters worked as maids in various homes and preferred working together whenever possible. So when 21-year-old Christine landed a job as a maid and cook in the home of a retired lawyer, I hope I don't butcher this name, Rene Lancelin, and his wife Leon, and the grown daughter Genevieve, who was also married, but they lived with the parents.
Mm-hmm.
Christine was able to convince Madame Lancelin to hire Leah as a chambermaid, so then they got to work together. They were very well fed, and they had a heated room and paid the standard wages for their time, so they, you know, they treated them very well. They even had a small room with a balcony, which was actually a luxury for servants at that point in time.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, so they had their own little getaway inside where they worked. So the sisters, they worked very long hours, and they worked really hard, but they showed no interest in anything outside of work, like finding a suitor or having any kind of social life other than going to church and the occasional visit to a fortune teller. I don't know if that was a regular thing back then, but.
Yeah, it's not. That doesn't sound like a bad life.
So, listen, this is what the fortune teller told them, that they were actually man and wife in a past life. It doesn't sound odd at all, does it?
No.
So people in the town said that the sisters were very odd, even strange, with cold, distant personalities. But with that said, the sisters got along extremely well with the whole entire Lancelin family. So I guess each to their own. Who gives a shit if somebody's cold and distant as long as they're working hard for you?
Right.
So Christine and Leah even began to look up to Madame Lancelin as a mother figure and referred to her as their mother. And to their own mother, they referred to her as that woman. So Madame Lancelin actually became aware that the sisters had routinely began sending their wages to their mother. And she actually took matters into her own hands and urged the girls to keep their salary for themselves and took it upon herself to let the mother, or that woman, know she was no longer receiving any funds. So basically, her free ride, her gravy train was over. So, I mean, that's really nice that she thought enough of them that she was going to stand up for them. It doesn't seem like very many people stood up for them.
Right.
So, after a few years into their employment, Madame Lancelin developed depression, and the girls were often her target of her mental illness. So, that happiness was short-lived. So, she'd been depressed, and she would take it out on them, becoming extremely critical of their cleaning. On several occasions, she literally assaulted them. So I think there might have been a little bit more than just depression going on.
Yeah.
So when, as time went on, the abuse escalated to the point where she slammed their heads against the wall and often pinched them, leaving marks. No. I never pinched any of my housekeepers.
They'd bite you back.
I know they would. So on February 2nd, 1933, Madame Lancelin and her daughter went shopping. Well, I guess it's Monsieur. Is that how you say it? Monsieur Lancelin, that's the father, went to his office.
Monsieur?
Yeah, that's it. Oh, okay. You have the little French accent I don't have.
I call pickles Monsieur Pickle Pauls all the time.
Goofy. Okay, so anyway, what you said, he went to his office, which sounded kind of weird because they said he was retired, but I guess he still had an office. They planned to meet later at a friend's dinner party that evening, but they didn't have it didn't happen because when Lancelin women returned home later that afternoon, the sisters explained to them that there was a power outage and it was caused by Christine urinating on an electrical socket. Well, all hell broke loose. Aren't you going to, you're not going to say anything?
I'm just trying to picture how that happens.
It's kind of odd. So anyway, all hell broke loose when the older woman attacked the sisters on the first floor landing. Christine screamed out, "I'm going to massacre them." And that's exactly what happened.
Ooh, so she peed on the thing.
The lady, Madame Lancelin, freaked the fuck out.
Right.
And started attacking the sisters, and Christine said, "I'm going to massacre them."
So but they started it, right?
Well, they peed in the electrical socket, that's so what I would like, say.
I think they started it.
So Christine lunged at Genevieve and gouged her eyes out while Leah joined in attacking the older woman, also gouging her eyes out as instructed by Christine. And when I say gouged their eyes out, they literally gouged their eyes out. Yikes. The sisters also used a pewter jug to smash the women in their heads. Now with their victims laying dazed and helpless with no eyes. I mean, they literally had no eyes. The Pappin sisters collected a hammer and a knife to finish them off, showing no mercy. I would say they had already done that, but they beat and stabbed the women until their screams and moaning stopped. So during the carnage they'd inflicted, which experts estimated to have lasted approximately 2 hours, they also took the time to mutilate their rear ends and thighs.
Ouch.
Yeah. So, I mean, 2 hours. So anyway, sometime later, Monsieur Lancelin returned home to the darkness, and assuming they'd already left for the dinner party, he left to meet them. But when he arrived at the home, he was concerned because they weren't there either. So, not knowing what the hell was going on, he returned back to his home around 7 p.m. and found that the house was bolted from the inside and in complete darkness, except for a light coming from the sister's bedroom. And because he found this to be extremely unusual, he contacted the police. And that's when they made entrance into the house by going over the garden wall. They couldn't believe what they found.
Hey guys, I just wanted to take a moment to gush about Anchor and how easy it is to make a podcast. First off, it's free. If it's free, it's for me. And who doesn't like free stuff? They have creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. So you can do it on the run, or if you're bored at lunch, you can fidget with your editing. Anchor will also distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many other podcast streaming networks. And you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started today.
So it was like a bad dream. So like I said, they went over the garden wall and couldn't believe what they were seeing when they entered the home. There on the floor laid the bodies of Madame Lancelin and her daughter Genevieve, beaten and stabbed beyond recognition. Madame Lancelin's eyes were found in a scarf around her neck, while one of Genevieve's was found under her body and the other on a nearby staircase. So fearing the two servants had met the similar fate, Monsieur Lancelin, was instructed to stay put while the authorities continued to the third floor, where the servants' quarters were. Voices could be heard coming from inside the room, but when authorities attempted to enter, they found the door locked. After knocking and still getting no answer, the lock was broken, and when the door was opened, they found the girls laying naked on the bed in a tight embrace, shivering in fear. And on the chair in the room laid the bloody hammer with hair still stuck to it.
Ooh.
So it took them 2 hours to kill him, but now they're scared.
Yeah, why would they be scared? Well, now they get caught. That's the problem.
Right. So the trial in prison. The sisters immediately confessed to the killings, and both confessed sole responsibility for the brutal killings, but claimed, Kelly, that it was self-defense. Both were placed in prison separately, which meant they had absolutely no contact, which was extremely upsetting to Christine because she wanted desperately to see her sister.
Right.
So there was a time during their incarceration that prison officials relented and allowed a supervised visit between the two girls. Christine reportedly started unbuttoning Leah's blouse and begged her to say yes, suggesting an incestuous relationship. That is fucked up.
That's really messed up.
Yeah. So none of this, are you okay, or whatever. It's
right.
I want to have sex with you. So July 1933, Christine experienced what was labeled as a fit or an episode and tried to gouge her own eyes out. But needless to say, she was placed in a straitjacket. And at some point, Christine had told the magistrate that she had had these kind of episodes in the past, and also had one the day of the murder. So who knows if she was being truthful or she was just trying to, you know, muster up some sympathy or maybe so they'd go lighter on her.
Right.
So anyway, the court-appointed lawyer pled not guilty by reason of insanity on their behalf because both demonstrated signs of mental illness, such as limiting eye contact or staring straight ahead, appearing to be in a daze. I don't believe that's mental illness, but whatever. Sometimes that you do that just to make people go away.
I do that a lot.
No, so do I. I can't see you. I can't hear you. I'm not looking at you.
You can't see me.
The court also had three doctors do a psychological evaluation to determine their mental state. And they all concluded that both were perfectly normal and deemed them sane to stand trial. I wouldn't consider them perfectly normal, but I believe they should stand trial.
Yeah.
They also believed that Christine's affection towards her sister were based on some family ties, not an incestuous relationship, as others had suggested, but during the September trial, medical testimony noted that a history of mental illness was within the family. So she was coming on to her sister, not because it was incestuous. It was because it was a medical issue with her family. because apparently her uncle had died by suicide and their cousin was living in an insane asylum. So after more consideration, it was decided that Christine and Leah suffered from shared paranoid disorder, which I've never heard before. And loosely means when groups or pairs of people are isolated from the world, one partner dominates the other. And in this case, Christine was a dominant personality, while her sister was the shy, quiet, obedient one. And people with this disorder will also show signs of delusion or hallucinations, which are transmitted from one person to the other. So it's almost like you're taking over the other one's personality in a way.
Right. So, and look, I mean, with the mental illness stuff and what they did, there's a difference between being mentally ill and just being fucked up.
Yeah, exactly.
And being a psycho.
So I'm not saying that, you know, they came to this point all on their own.
Right.
I think they were doomed from the beginning, but people still need to pay the price.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I guess that's what the jury thought too, because it only took them 40 minutes to deliberate and hand down a guilty verdict to both of them. So the court did show compassion for Leah, which I'm not sure why, because they believed the older sister was the mastermind and called the shots. She was given 10 years of hard labor. Christine was sentenced to death by guillotine, which was actually commuted to life in prison.
Fair enough.
Yep.
Although the guillotine's like quick.
Yeah.
You know.
Bada bing, bada boom. Exactly. Bada bing, bada boom. The separation of the sisters caused Christine's mental illness to deteriorate rapidly, causing her to have violent fits of rage, depression, and starvation. It was also reported that she attempted to tear her own eyes out again. So at that point, she was placed in a mental institution or an asylum, whatever they called it back then, in hopes that professional help would benefit her. So I'm thinking it didn't. So still separated from Leah, she continued to spiral, and on May 18th, 1937, she starved herself to death at the age of 32.
Ugh, what an awful way to go.
Yeah.
I will never starve to death.
I know, that's horrible. So Leah, the younger sister, she made out much better than Christine and only had to serve 8 of her 10-year sentence because she had good behavior.
Mm-hmm.
She was actually released in 1941. She then moved to a nearby town, and get this, with her mother, and she earned a living as a hotel maid under an assumed name. Can you imagine? Her mother is the one that started all this, and then she goes to have her mother move with her. But here's one thing for sure. I bet you her mother didn't fuck with her.
Oh, no.
It's like, bitch, do you want to keep your eyes?
Exactly. So I'm like, they have a thing for eyes, and that grosses. Yeah. Eyes, teeth, and fingernails are like the grossest things to me.
So, one account said she died in 1982. And that's a long life.
I would say they're old, man.
Well, the one died when she was only 32, but this one died when she was like in her 80s.
Holy crap.
But they're not sure. The other account said she was living in a hospice center in France and had a stroke that rendered her partially paralyzed and was unable to speak and died in 2001, which make her like 90 something years old. Because she was born in the 1911.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so she was either 80 or 90 years old when she died, but they're not sure how. It's like two different stories. But also, that's pretty old for that time, and especially for having such a hard life.
I don't know. Jail might be pretty cushy over there. We don't know. I haven't seen Locked Up Abroad France.
But here's the thing. Christine got her wish. And after years of separation, they were actually buried together for all eternity.
Aww.
So.
Wow, they're so messed up.
Go for the eyes.
I know. Crazy. Like, every time you say that, I like close my eyes really tight and put my hands over them.
I know. Don't touch my eyes.
Yeah, I will. Like, if you open a thing of eye drops somewhere in the vicinity of me and I know that they're open, my eyes will start blinking uncontrollably. The eye people hate me because they can never get a glaucoma test on me.
Oh, I'm fine with that because I used to wear contacts. But so, yeah, that's the crazy bitches of the 1900s.
Ooh, yikes. They are crazy bitches.
People are just as bad then as they are now. There's more of them now.
I think they were a little more fucked up back then because it's like they didn't have guns and other weapons that we have today.
They go balls out. They are brutal.
Right.
I'm not saying that what happens nowadays is like a walk in the park, but.
No, but yeah, but a lot of times, like, you know, like I've watched Game of Thrones and they like behead people in the town square. And that was like your Sunday afternoon entertainment and stuff like that. So it's like. Holy crap.
So that was a different one for me. I usually go towards the missing and endangered, but...
You do.
Trying something a little different, thinking outside the box a bit.
I like it, because you've
I'm
been...
I'm trying to get my inner Kelly.
I know, because I've been such a loser and working hard at my new job, and Kim's been holding up everything and making everything sound amazing, and... But next
it's
week...
It's a team effort.
Oh, I know, but next week it'll be Kelly-centric, and I'll tell you the story of Dorothea and how she would steal Social Security checks from vulnerable men.
Oh, she was like a black widow.
Oh, yeah, she was worse than that.
Oh, okay.
She didn't even marry them.
Okay, another crazy bitch.
Yep. So it's like crazy bitch season. I mean, we all go a little loopy around the holidays. There's so much to do.
That's true. Just don't scratch anybody's eyes out.
Oh no, I will leave people's eyes intact. That's not for me.
All right. Well, everybody have a wonderful Thanksgiving, and remember, yep, you're very blessed.
Yes, and stay out of trouble, and get those COVID shots. All right, until next time. Bye.
Bye.
Don't go away. We have a special treat in store for you when I interview the author of Crazy Is as Crazy Does, The Life of a Serial Killer, John H. Mudgett. Welcome, John, to our podcast. And thank you for taking the time to be on so we can hear a little bit more about Crazy Is as Crazy Does, The Life of a Serial Killer.
Well, thanks for having me there, Kim. I appreciate it.
So how is the book doing?
It's doing all right. I mean, it's been out a little over 2 years. I haven't really advertised full force, but except for late.
Okay.
Views right now on Amazon, so it's doing all right.
Well, I have to say how much I liked it. I couldn't put that book down. Kelly was the same way, only I finished it way before her. And I'm not one for, I didn't think I was, for that kind of a book, like the murderer and the serial killer thing. And honestly, your book, it kind of opened all kinds of doors for me. Because now I'm actually watching scary movies.
So, oh, that's crazy. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I loved it. So my first question, and it's like burning into my mind since I've read this book. Are you planning a sequel?
Well, I didn't originally plan for a sequel. I was going to actually, I don't know how much I should give away. I was actually going to, everybody was supposed to die. But then I said, I'm going to leave it open just in case.
I think that was smart.
Yeah, I think it might have been too, because little William keeps creeping in my mind, and I keep writing little things down in the middle of the night when I wake up. I always have a notebook by my bed, and so, yeah, it might take a few more years, but it's definitely something that I've been thinking about lately.
So that's great, because I was really excited. What about, did you ever think of maybe a prequel? and dive into John's childhood and his teenage years.
Well, I mean, I kind of did it quickly. I mean, I gave you a little bit of what he was doing, but I wasn't going into more detail than the little bit that I did there. The prequel I was thinking of was starting when the kidnapping of William's mother and him with Chris. I was going to get into detail with that. Like, what did Chris do with them the 2 days he was missing before John caught up with him?
That's a fantastic idea.
You know, and that way it will give a little more in-depth to William's sickness, where his is all going to come from. Because he's not the same type of serial killer as his grandfather. He's going to be a different one.
That's cool. Well, you know what? I'm trying not to give too much of this away, because I want people to be excited about it like I was and how Kelly was. But the ending blew me away.
I've been accused of making the ending a little bit too short, but it is a short. I try to keep it a short read.
Well, it's a novella, so.
I'm not a Stephen King novelist, but.
Not yet.
Not yet, right.
But you're definitely, I mean, it was fast, but it is a novella, like you said. It's a quick book. It's an easy read. But
right.
Honestly, that ending, it blew my mind. I didn't know where that was coming from. So it was definitely a surprise.
Well, that's good. That's the way I wanted it. So that's great to hear, you know, some live feedback besides a few people that I had given it to before I published it.
So, John, what inspired you to write Crazy Is as Crazy Does, The Life of a Serial Killer?
You know, it's funny you ask that. It's something that came to me like 20-something years ago. It was like 1995 after I watched Forrest Gump and how he went from one situation to the next and how, you know, he had real-life issues in there, like with Elvis and the presidents and things like that. But I was watching Sling Blade and Copycat Killer and a few other serial killer movies that came out during that time frame. And I don't know, it just hit me like, what if I had a guy who ran into real life people and how that would affect him in his way of killing? And so that's kind of where that came from. And it just, and I would tell people about this, like, you know, what if he ran into Ted Bundy? What if he ran into, you know, this guy or that guy, and people would be like, that's cool, you should write it. But I never really, I started to write it back in the 90s, but I never really had time. I was in the military back then, and I was always moving around, and I had a family. And now that my kids grew up and I had a little bit of time on my hands, I actually sat down and said, you know what, it's time for me, I'm going to write this. Because, I don't know, I started watching Mindhunters on Netflix and things like that, and I'm like, it's time to get it out now. You know, everybody's into serial killers again. I'm going to get it out now while it's hot.
Well, I tell you, as I read this book, I was in my head thinking, we did a podcast on that one, and we did a podcast on that one. So it was almost like it was even more, like, real.
But, right, and that's, I tried to keep it as real as I could.
It was a really good read, but I understand that you had a different name originally for the title of this novella.
Oh, yes, I did. It was called It's in the Blood. And but then I had to give homage to Forrest Gump, so that's why I changed it to Crazy Is as Crazy Does. And I also, I don't know if you noticed, but my last two chapters, one is entitled Crazy Is, and the other's entitled Crazy Does.
Cool.
So
did you?
Yeah, It's in the Blood, and then I also had Milk Cartons was the other one that I was going to name it Milk Cartons, because back in the day, they always had the missing persons on the milk cartons.
I remember that.
You remember that?
Yes. I'm aging myself. So when you changed the title, did that influence you in any different direction to change the dynamics of the book? Or did it basically just stay the same?
It basically stayed the same. Actually, what it did is it made me change my last two chapters, Crazy Is as Crazy Does, and name them that.
Okay.
So the last two chapters were named something else, but don't ask me what they were because I can't remember now. I just changed to those. Cause, and it's fitting, if you don't you agree?
I do. Actually, your book is the first book like its kind that I've ever read. I've never been one for the serial killer and murders and stuff like that. But it it, you know what? It touches a different part of your brain, for sure.
I really appreciate that. And, you know, I try to cut some gore out at the end so people could sleep at night. You know, I didn't want to get too in detail with the severed heads and things like that. You know what I mean?
Well, I just really enjoyed it immensely. I did notice that I've read your acknowledgments, and it really, to me, it seems like your family is an extremely important part of yourself. Is that a true statement?
Yes, very much true.
That's nice to hear. I like the fact that your mom wasn't really one to read that kind of stuff, but she was supportive.
Actually, she still has it on her table. She can't get past chapter 5, so...
Oh, push through it. You'll love it, and then you'll want more. Wait, she'll read the whole thing, and then she'll be on you like I am about writing a sequel. John, is this your very first book?
It is, actually, yes.
Well, yeah. If that's how good your first book was, I'm sure that the second and third will be even better.
Well, I hope so, but you know, the first, you can never beat the first one, you know what I'm saying? Like, how many screams are there now? The first scream is the best scream. The first Jason is the best Jason, you know what I mean?
I get it, but I just want to read more. I have to have another one.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, I'm like I said, I am putting it all down for young William, and we'll see where that takes us.
Well, I can't wait.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you so much. I really enjoyed talking to you. Is there anything else you can tell us about the book before we go?
I'm not sure what would you like me to say. I mean, I appreciate that you love it so much, and you know, I'm glad that people out there, there's a few people out there that won't get this book because you really have to be into the serial killers. I don't know if you noticed that or not. I don't mention names.
Nope, I know. That's why it was almost like a puzzle for me when I said, oh, I know who that was. We did a podcast. So it's like you have to use your imagination.
Yes, but I mean, they all are true people. Each chapter has a true person in it. And so if you're not familiar with the serial killers, you might not get this book. It's written for more of those people that are into true crime, and they know exactly, you know, what I'm talking about.
Definitely.
But, I mean, even if you're a novice person and you're not into all the serial killers, you can still get something out of it, because the way he meets these people and what those people do and how it affects him, you know, or how he affects them, you can see it, you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
But it's better if you know who I'm talking about. You'll get it a lot more.
It probably is, but I think there's a lot more people like you and I out there than we even realize. You know, you have to have that certain kind of sense of humor and dark side.
Yeah, it definitely is a dark side, you know. If you like movies like The Seven Psychopaths and Pulp Fiction, then you'll love the book, I would think. But anyway, well, I don't know how I got off topic like that, but I appreciate, you know, you reaching out to me and enjoy. I'm glad you enjoyed the book as much as you did, and I hope other people will as well.
Well,
it seems like I'm getting more good stars than bad stars at this point.
Well, actually, we did our giveaways to our four people. Our last one was announced on our last podcast, and the three out of the four that we had have already read it and loved it.
Oh, awesome. All right.
The fourth one hasn't gotten it yet, so we can't count her.
Well, that's good. Let me know. I can always send you a couple more if you want to do another one.
That's so nice. Oh, you know what? I want to do it again when you have your next book.
Okay. All right. See, you're going to force me into doing it sooner than later.
Probably. Well, I'm trying.
I am a procrastinator,
I'm not going to lie. I am kind of trying to push you kind of hard, but I know everybody has other things that has to get done first. But we sure appreciate you coming on the show and doing a little interview with us.
Yeah, it's awesome. Thank you so much again for having me. I love it. I love your show. So.
Oh, thank you.
Definitely.
Find us at patreon.com/shinythingspodcast. Follow us on Instagram at shinythingspodcast. Find us on our Facebook group page called Shiny Things Podcast. You can also find us on Twitter at shinythingspod1. You can email us at shinythingspodcast@gmail.com. Don't be shy. Use any of our social media to send us show ideas, some love, or share additional details we may have missed. Remember to like us and give us 5 stars on your favorite podcasting platform. Until next time, thanks for listening.